We are on sheet 58. Wow. Who can believe it? And we need to cover this really quite controversial topic today that I mentioned before. Rabbi Natan Slifkin got himself into some hot water about 8 years ago when he published a few books on Chazal and science. And he was dealing with the following question. What do we do where Chazal makes certain assessments of scientific reality and base halakha on them? And today it doesn't seem to work that way. And he had a certain approach in his book. He gave a few different approaches. I've summarized 8 approaches on the sheet, 8 ways to deal with this. Some of which would justify changing the halacha, some of which would justify keeping the halacha. And we'll talk about these in a minute. The classic case is the case of the lice. Let's have a look. Tomorrow Shabbos says as follows. Netanya. If you kill a louse, lice are tiny little things that live in your hair, okay, or in your body, and they're visible just about, and you can see them and you can kill them. It's like killing a camel. Why does he pick a camel? Because it's big. Meaning, don't think that killing a tiny little thing is less serious in Chilul Shabbos than killing a big camel. It's not true. They're both killing, they're both an Issur Doraisa, just like it's also to kill a camel Doraisa, it's a Malach of Shechita, it's also to kill a Malkiel of Yosef. Rav Yossi argues, Ad kan lo pligi rabbono ela divrei Eliezer, ela bekina. The only argument is with on a kina, meaning Chazat, the rabbis say you can kill a kina on Shabbos, Rav Eliezer says you can't. There ain't a para or rava, but it doesn't do, because it doesn't do pru revu. It doesn't reproduce sexually. There aren't male and female lice that reproduce having baby lice. So how does it reproduce? We'll see in a minute. Aval shash gotsim v'ramasim, but other creepy crawlies and flies and insects, deparim v'ravim, that they do pru revu. Likely, he said, there's no argument. Everyone agrees you can't kill them. It's just this particular issue with the louse that the rabbis argue Rebbe Lezen and say you can kill the lice. Amalei Abaya says, V'kina ein para rava? Really? The kinim, the lice, not do pru ravu? What about the following statement? V'hamama, don't we have a statement? Yoshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu zan u'makar mikarni ra'imim at beitzei kinim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has rachamim and feeds the whole world from the greatest sea animals to the tiniest eggs of the lice. Beitzei kinim. Now, if lice have eggs, then they have to have babies, and they have to reproduce. So is that a kasha? So it says, no. Beitzei kinim doesn't mean lice eggs. Minahu, it's a separate species, demikri, which is called beitzei kinim. Meaning, lice really don't reproduce sexually, and they don't have mummy lice and daddy lice. And beitzei kinim is just another species of little louse called beitzei kinim. So let's have a look right now. Yeah, we'll see right now. So let's have a look. Number two. The Shulchan Aruch rules, Perush, which is a flea, Asa Letzoda, you're not allowed to capture it on Shabbos, Ela Imkein Hu Al Basaroi, unless it's actually on your flesh, the Oiksoi, and it's biting into you, and it's actually, the flea is actually biting you, V'Asa Lahargo, and you're not allowed to kill fleas on Shabbos, you can't kill fleas on Shabbos, Avalkina, but allows, Mutza Lahargo. You're allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos, Shulchan Aruch says, based on this Gemara. You're allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos. They're not included in the Issa of Shechita. Because why? Because they don't do Peru Rebu, like the Gemara said. We pass like the Rabbanon, not like Rebbe Eliezer, which makes sense. We're allowed to kill a louse on Shabbos. 1 second. Says the Mishnah Berurah, why? Number three. Hatam de Mechalkim Bein Perush Lekina. Why do we make a difference between a flea and a louse? Who to call Malacha is the Shabbos Mishkan Yafina Lehu, because all Malacha Shabbos we derive from the Mishkan. You know this from your Shabbos class. The Yafina Mises Kol Balchai, we derive the Issa to kill any animal, Lechiyov, as a Chiyov, Mishchitas Eilim, from killing the rams for the skins. Yeah? Madamim Shehayum Bemishkan Bishvil Oreseya. The lav dafka alidei shchita. It's not only killing animals by shchita, which is also on Shabbos. Duhu adin alidei hakah, if you hit them and kill them. V'chanika, or if you strangle them and kill them. Or nechir, or if you stab them and kill them. That's Issa d'oraisa, just the same on Shabbos. V'chol ki agav, not anything like that. Kevin shiba alidei zen, atilas neshama, since you're taking the life away, chayav. Chayav is d'oraisa. Vamrinan, and we say Ma Elim Adamim Mishiparim Ravim. Just the example of the Elim in the Midbar, the goats in the Midbar, which reproduce with mothers and fathers, Peruravu. Af Kol Shiparim Ravim, Chazal learned only things which are like the Elim, which reproduce with fathers and mothers. La Afuke, to exclude Kina, lies. Where do they come from? Now look at this. De Einu Ba Mizachon Nekeva. They don't come from males and females. Ela Ba Min Hazeya. They come from sweat. Okay? Loi Chashiva Bria. They are not considered to be a creature, and therefore there's no issa to kill them. Aval Perush, but fleas. Afal Pishe Gam Hi Einu Paravarava. Fleas also don't reproduce by Puravu, he says. It's true. Where do they come from? Also, sweat. Mikol Mokum, nevertheless, Kaven She Yosa, Min Ha'afar, since they come from the ground, Yeshba Chius, they have a kind of life force, Ki'ilu Nibra Mizachon Nekeva, as if they were produced in the normal sexual reproduction. V'chayev Aleh, and they're also included in the Chiyav, Mishum Netilas Hashama, V'afilu Ima Berush Akta Otalach. Fine. Where do life come from? From sweat. What does this mean, from sweat? This was a scientific understanding that was absolutely common in the ancient world up until the 17th, 18th century, which is that there's such a thing as spontaneous reproduction. That certain things just come from the ambient atmosphere. Why did they think that? Well, it's obvious, isn't it? Take a piece of meat, which is completely clean, wash it very carefully, okay? Leave it out in the sun for 3 or 4 days, watch it to see nothing lands on it, yeah? And what happens after 3 or 4 days? It's crawling with maggots. Where did they come from? You've been watching the meat. Nothing landed on it, they obviously came from the atmosphere. Certain atmospheric conditions spontaneously cause reproduction of certain species. That's what people thought. It's a perfectly natural way of thinking. Right, they didn't have a microscope. Who eventually started doubting this? Over the 17th, 18th centuries, they started questioning whether this was the case. They invented further means of looking into microscopic existence. And eventually, Louis Pasteur, you've heard of Louis Pasteur? Louis Pasteur proved that actually there was stuff in the air, which was microscopic, which was landing on these things and laying stuff, and it was hatching from there. How did he prove it? Because he put pieces of meat, such like in a vacuum, he sucked all the air out, so that it was in a vacuum with nothing else in there but the meat, and he left it out, and nothing happened to it. Nothing reproduced. Why? Because there's nothing there. And it won't spontaneously reproduce, and therefore he proved it was all coming from creatures, we just can't see them. And now we can see them, we see the sacca do produce sexually. Lice do have mummy lice and daddy lice, and they lay little baby lice, and they do their own thing. Now, therefore Chazal's assessment seems to be incorrect. So what do you do with that information? Today, can you kill lice on Shabbos, yes or no? Because according to Chazal, the answer is yes. But it was based on the assumption that they don't reproduce sexually. And now we know that they do. So can you still kill them? Or is that Chilul Shabbos? Does the halacha change? The chumra? Or does the halacha stay as it was before? That's the question. And there are many other examples like this. I listed on the bottom there in Trefus. We talked about Trefus last time. Animals that Chazal say cannot live for 12 months. And today they can. So are they still Trefus or they're not Trefus? Drusa, it says that certain animals are trait because they've been scratched by predators that have venom in their nails. We now know that these dead predators do not have venom in their nails. Are they still trefa? Certain amounts of the liver, Chazal say that as long as a certain amount of the liver remains, the animal is not a trefa because it can grow back. And scientists say, no, it can't. It can't grow back anymore. Similarly, in the bottom one, it says that certain animals are a trefa if a certain amount of their skull is missing. And now we see it's common for birds to have much more of their skull missing, and they live perfectly happily. Meaning, there are all sorts of examples where Chazal say that the science is, or the halacha based on the science is X, or maybe it isn't based on the science, we'll see soon, and now it doesn't seem to be the case. The classic case is the flea, but there are others. The louse rather than others. Look at page 2. Here are 8 approaches. 1, 2, and 3 would indicate that we should change the halacha. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 indicates that we should. Let's go through them quickly. Maybe we can say that we're talking about a different case. Chazal was talking about this, but now what we have today is this, and therefore obviously the halacha is different, because that kind of louse doesn't reproduce, but this kind of louse does. That's one option. Number 2, we could say Nishtane Hateva, which we talked about last time. They used to be like this, But now it's not like this anymore. And quite how far can you take that? We talked about this last time. Some things are clearly, obviously, yes, nishtame hateva. It really doesn't work that way anymore. And other things you're going to say, really? Honestly, are you going to tell me that so much has changed? That we said last time. Are you going to turn around and say Chazal are wrong in science? Is that controversial? Is that going to cause Judaism to fall apart? Is everyone going to get upset? And by the way, a lot of people do get upset. We'll see soon why they get upset when you say that. They're all reasons that you would say you should change the halacha. What about the following, which way you shouldn't change the halacha? Maybe it's halacha l'moshe misina, it's nothing to do with the reasons. The science is just a side issue. Really, the halacha is coming from Sinai. Maybe you'd say that, look, leaving aside the science, the halacha is fixed at the time of the Shas, and we don't have any Sanhedrin today, therefore there's nothing we can do. Meaning, yes, of course, maybe the science was right, wrong, whatever, but it's the halacha and it's the halacha. We'll talk about the idea of the 2,000 years of Torah, which we'll talk about soon. Maybe, are you going to turn around and say today's science is wrong? Maybe it is. How much of today's science will be taught in 150 years as scientific facts? Very little. Very little. Does that mean we can turn around today and say the science is wrong? Not necessarily. Depends on what kind of science you're talking about and what kind of things that the science is saying. We'll talk about that. Or maybe you could say that, look, Chazal are not really talking about what it seems they're talking about. They have deeper metaphoric reasons behind everything. And maybe you're misreading it by taking it too simply. These are eight approaches.
Also, if that's the case, then people took what they said literally before. So how come now we're saying it's just...
Good. That's a good question. I mean, each of these approaches have problems. None of them are perfect. But we have to have some approach, and if you can come up with a ninth or a tenth, tell me and we can talk about it. What's that? How is the science... I don't understand what you're asking.
How is saying that science is different? Like they got science wrong, problematic.
Why is that problematic? So we'll talk about that in a minute. Why is that problematic? We'll see. Okay, why is that a problem? Are Chazal perfect? We'll see how that works. First of all, let's deal with the first two, which are fairly simple. Is it reasonable to say that they're different lice? Is it reasonable to say that the lice at the time of the Gemara might be different kind of lice than the lice that we see today? That's perfectly reasonable. Who knows? Maybe they're talking about a different kind of lice. Maybe they're talking about a different species. Who knows? However, it is less reasonable to say that the lice at the time of the Shulchan Aruch and the lice at the time of the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah lived less than 100 years ago. Okay, the man that lives downstairs from us in our apartment in Haranoth cycled to the Mishnah Berurah's Levaya as a young man across Europe. Okay, the Chofetz Chaim is not somebody lost in the mist of time. He lived not so long ago. Are you telling me that the life that existed in 1933 are different to the life that existed in 1983? That's already stretches the imagination too far. Look at number four. Yesh kasva shekayom. There are those who write, okay, that today, and roim, we see the kinim shebarosh, that headlights, parim ravim, they taka do reproduce. No doubt about it. Umatilim beitim, and they lay eggs. But tzarech lema, maybe you could say, the bizmanehem, in the old days, hakinim shebarosh loy hayu parim ravim. The kinim and the headlights didn't lay eggs. But the kinim today also laharga arosa to kill. Meaning, you change the halacha because today's life is different from the life of Chazal. I think that answer is difficult because of what I just said. That if you could say that about 2,000 years ago, maybe, but you can't. You really can't say that about today. You can't say that the life. It's obviously a different methodology in halacha, not a different metzias in life. I would have thought this is a difficult answer. Nishtane hateva is also a difficult answer in that sense, although we talked last time about how Nishtame HaTeva applies. In terms of the lice, again, I think it's difficult to turn around and say the lice have evolved in a way that, or devolved, or whatever it is, that they used to not reproduce sexually, but now they do reproduce sexually. That's a difficult thing to say as well. It's very fundamental. However, approach number three, which Annie's asking a good question, what's wrong with it? Maybe it's not wrong. Let's have a look now. The first source I want to bring you is something called the Pachad Yitzchak. You've never seen it before, I imagine. It's not Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner also wrote a sefer called the Pachad Yitzchak about 60, 70 years ago, maybe less. This is a Pachad Yitzchak by someone called Rav Yitzchak Lampronti. Where did he come from?
Lampronti.
Italian, yes. Yitzchak Lampronti. Although I bet he didn't speak like that. He writes a book which is really an encyclopedia of halachic concepts. And he writes the following. Look at these words. Number five. He wrote this about 300 years ago, just as people were beginning to discover modern scientific method. Ilav de mistafina, you should get excited when you see those words. If I weren't too frightened to say so, which means he's about to drop a bombshell, Amina, I would say the following. Debizmanenu, today, Shechachmei Hatzolodois, he bitu, the wise people of Tolada, of science, have looked, uru and seen, v'yadu, and they know, v'kasu, and they've written, the kol balchai yihia mishigia, that every animal in the world, no matter what it is, chavamina beitim, comes from some reproductive process, from eggs. Because they're hochichu, they proved it, v'rayas brurus, with clear proofs, scientific proofs, they didn't just make this up. In pain, if that's the case, surely, if you're worried about your neshama, you should be careful not to kill life on Shabbos. He's being machmer. He says, I don't want to be mecha, I want to be machmer. Don't kill fleas, don't kill lice. Are you going to bring yourself into a chi of chatas? Meaning, if lice really do reproduce, then they should be, he's saying, also the right to kill on Shabbos, even though Chazal said they weren't. I would say in the following, if the rabbis of the Gemara could only hear, the proofs of the non-Jewish scientists, yachsuru, they would go back on their opinion, okay, the Yodun, they would admit, the Divrehem, to what the other people say, we'll see what that case is in a minute, galgal choyzeh mazal kavur. He makes a very strong statement. If Chazal would have known today's science, they would never have said that. But they didn't. So they said that. We're trying to be machmi here, not mekel. I'm not trying to go against Chazal akula. The case that we're going to see right now, where the rabbis agreed to the non-Jewish scientists of the time, they show very clearly, point with a finger, the lav kol mile the itmu Gemara, not everything in the Gemara, mipi hakabolahem, it's from a Masorah. Not everything the Chazal says is from a Masorah. Elo de chachmei Yisrael, dibru gam heim lefa'amim, sometimes the rabbis of the Gemara speak, mipi haseichel, from common sense, v'chakira, an experiment, kainoshit, human experimentation, v'lo mipi hakabolah, not from Sinai. Deim lo kein, lama lehem lehoidos, because if that's not the case, why would they agree to the non-Jewish scientists in the case that we're about to see? Hayalehem lehitchazek, they should have been strong, but kabbalosim in their kabbalah, v'loy leshuv mipi kol rayos in omos ha'olam, and not to send back for all the rayos in the world. He says a very interesting statement. And you see where he's getting it from, he didn't make this up. Chazal had a Masorah on halacha. In halacha, Chazal are absolute. But in areas of science, who said? Maybe they're speaking just from the local science of the time that they asked people about, and second century, third century science was limited, and therefore it's not a surprise that Chazal got this wrong. And if they would know today's science, of course they would turn around and say, yeah, of course. I mean, now we say that it's also to kill lice on Shabbos. Who is Rabbi Yitzchak Lampronsky? Why do you ask that question? I didn't have a picture of him. No, well, that's an interesting question. You're saying that because if this sounds very quote-unquote modern, you know?
Yeah.
The answer is, he wasn't so controversial. He wasn't one of the heavyweights, but you'll see he's basing it on people who were. He was one of the rabbonim in the 17th century. Okay, where did he live exactly? I think I just put Italy here. Yeah, Italy, 18th century. Okay, fine. This is what he says. What's he basing this on? First of all, a Gemara. We'll see this is not just his Shita. Look at the Gemara number 6. Chachma Yisrael Oimrim, Beyom Chama Mehalechet Lamata Min Hakarka. Okay? Min Arakiya, excuse me. Chachma Yomata Oilam Oimrim, Beyom Chama Mehalechet Lamata Min Arakiya, Ubalaila Lamata Min Hakarka. What's going on here? I don't know if you got this. This is a bit tricky. Let's deal with the following question. What happens to the sun at night time? Imagine that you never learned any astronomy at school. So here you have the horizon, okay? And this is the east, and this is the west, okay? And the sun rises in the east, goes up in the sky, it sets in the west, okay? It goes in that pattern. What happens to it when the sun sets?
It goes away.
It goes away. So imagine you're sitting looking at the horizon 2,000, 3,000 years ago, and the sun disappears. So the obvious question is, where does it go? Because the next morning, it's over there. So what are the options? So it said here, The rabbi said, the Chachmei Yisrael said, during the day the sun goes below the Rakia. Where's the Rakia? The Rakia is like the firmament of the heavens. Rakia is like this area here. So by day, the sun goes below the Rakia. Okay? Let's imagine this is the Rakia. Yeah, that's like a...
Meaning we're talking about spiritual? Or talking
no.
Physical?
Well, that's a good question. Are we talking about Rakia? Physical or spiritual? We'll get to that soon. But he says the sun goes below the Rakia, and at night time, what does he do? It goes under the horizon, it goes outside the Rakia, and it goes over the top again, where you can't see it. Okay? Back down here again. And in the morning, it comes back. Meaning, the sun disappears behind the screen, goes back the other way. Yeah, the earth's flat. The sun disappears behind the screen, goes back the other way, where it, the other way it came from. And by the next morning, it's back to where it started. That's what the Chachmei Yisrael said. The Chachmei Umot HaOlam said, no. But Yom, during the day, the Chama Mahalechet Lamata Min Rakia. During the day, the sun goes below this firmament. Ubalayla, where does he go at night? Lamata Min Hakarka. He goes under the ground. And that's why it's where it is the next morning. It goes below the earth. Now, they're not necessarily even arguing that the earth is round. That's a separate argument. Maybe the earth is flat, and it goes like this. Okay, this is not proof that the earth is round, although there are proofs you can bring from Chazal all over the place, but they felt that the earth was round, not flat. They talk about, as the Medrash talks about, Alexander the Great going up in a spaceship and looking down on the earth and seeing the curvature of the earth from a space rocket. Very interesting Medrash about that. Yeah, it's a Medrash. Chazal wrote it a long time ago. It talks about that. Also, they talk about, in Avodah Zorah, they say, if you see an Avodah Zorah carrying a globe, you know, like Atlas, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Carrying the world. So you know that statue's in Avodah Zorah because he's Kilu, he's carrying the world, which is a globe, yeah, on his shoulders. So there's all sorts of riots that Chazal thought the world was round, but that's not relevant here.
Okay, who is it? Who? Sciences of the
Shkia
and the this and the that.
But they're neither here nor there in terms of Shkia. The Shkia just means when the sun disappears through the Rakia. You could fit all that with this. So again, Chazal said the world, the sun goes back over the top, and the Ursa said it goes under the bottom. But look at the last three words, last four words. I'm a Rebbe, who's Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, says, V'nirin divreihem midivreinu. Which means what? Nirin divreihem midivreinu.
They're more true.
It makes sense like they say, not like what we say. And he says, you know, I'm going to go for the Ursa Adam. I'm going for the non-Jewish scientists, not for the Chachamim. So it says Rabbi Yitzchak Lampronsi, you see, he went back on what they thought. If indeed it was a Kabbalah Mitzinai, how dare he? Well, how can he do that? How can he suddenly agree to the non-Jewish scientists against the Kabbalah? So, no, it clearly wasn't such a Kabbalah. Look in the Mora Nebuchim, in number 7. Al Tidrash Mimeni, says the Rambam, don't ask me, Lahatim, to justify, Et Kol Inyani Ha Astronomia Shehem, all the astronomical pronouncements of the rabbis. Esther, would you mind bringing me a glass of water, please? Don't ask me to justify that. Shehem sinu et amatzav kifishahu, that they should be describing the reality as it really is. Why? Ki ha matematika haita lakuya, because their maths was not quite as advanced, but oisam is one in those days. Vehem lo idanu bezois mebechina shehem moisrim amrois, okay, amrois. They're not. They're not judging on this basis of these statements, mipi anavim, from prophets. They're not coming from prophecy. Elema bechinas, but from their own tests. Shehem hayuchach me oisem hatzkufos. That the people of that time did these tests, the mitzoyas eile, in these areas of expertise. Or shama oisem mipi chach me oisem hatzkufos, or they listened to the people of the day. Meaning the Rambam says explicitly, don't ask me to justify the science of Chazal, because they weren't basing it on Masorah, they were basing it on the people of the day, and the people of the day were clearly not right. Okay? Interestingly, the same is true about the Refuahs of Chazal. The Rambam says, don't follow the Refuahs of Chazal. Would he tell you to follow the Refuahs of him?
Yeah.
Why?
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Do we follow the health advice of the Rambam?
No.
Although it must be said that if you look in Hilchos Deos at the health advice of the Rambam, it actually sounds quite contemporary.
Right.
He says things like, well, in principle the Rambam is not different. In other words, if you had a choice whether to go to a 21st century doctor, mm-hmm, or the Rambam,
Wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that just like
it's
if push comes to
shove? You've got to
put leeches on you. Okay, no, but if you have a kid,
they use leeches today.
Regardless of if I'm sick or not, you're going to be the
Rabbah. No, listen, regardless of meeting the Rabbah.
Regardless.
I would like to live through that encounter.
Right.
I don't think the Rambam would tell you to follow 12th century medicine if you had a choice to follow 21st century medicine.
Yeah.
Right. No.
Even though many of the things that he says in that sefer are extremely contemporary. He says you should exercise in the morning, take a shower before breakfast. Certain kinds of fruit.
In the morning.
He says all sorts of things. Look, there are people who have a whole like industry on the Rambam's diet, and there's a whole book written on the Rambam's diet. Yeah. Whatever. The point is, I don't think the Rambam would say to you, given a choice between having, microsurgery or doing what they would have done in the 12th century.
Microsurgery.
Right. Their idea of microsurgery was probably like, and have a... So, and that's reasonable. Look at Rabbi Avraham ben Rambam in number 8. Lefi hakdamazo... Lonit Chayav Mipi, 1 second, God Lomalek Chach Meha Talmud. I'll come to you in a second, Rivki. We are not obligated in front of the rabbis of the Talmud, the Gedolim of the Talmud, okay? Tchun Hashem, okay? Leshleimut Tchun Hashem, the Perush HaTorah. He says that in terms of their explanation on the terms of the Torah, or Bedikdukeha, okay, the Yosher Amrehem, the Bir Klali Upratim, Shenitan Lahem, Vanam Idatam, Becholam Arehem Berufus. Just because you follow them in areas of Torah doesn't mean you follow them in areas of Refuah as well. Bechachmas Ateva, and in issues of science, the Hatchuna, and astronomy, what have you. We don't have to believe in them, thank you, like we believe in the Torah. Because in terms of the Torah, they had a Masorah, they were giants in spirituality. They were given the authority in Torah to decide on matters of halacha. Halacha is ruchnias. As it says, but who says that's the case of science? Who says that's the same? Who says they claim that authority? The authority of Al-Pi HaTorah She'erucha is Torah, is not necessarily science. Rivki, you had a question. Okay. Yeah? Good. Have a look at Rabbi Hirsch. Rabbi Hirsch, Rav Shimon Rafael Hirsch, says it very clearly. Who's going to read for me number 9? Yes. Shana.
In my opinion, the first principle that every student of Chazal statements must keep before that is the following. Chazal were the sages of God's law, the receivers, transmitters, and teachers of his Torah, his mitzvot, and his interpersonal laws. They did not especially master the natural sciences, geometry, astronomy, or medicine, except insofar as they needed them for knowing, observing, and fulfilling the Torah. We do not find that this knowledge was transmitted to them from Sinai. We find that Chazal themselves considered the wisdom of the Gentile scholars equal to their own in the natural sciences. To determine who was right in areas where the Gentile sages disagreed with their own knowledge, they did not rely on their tradition but on reason. Moreover, they even respected the opinion of the Gentile scholars, admitting when the opinion of the latter seemed to be right.
This is very clear. Rav Hirsch takes clearly the view, which is that you are not mechuyev. It's not in any sense a zilzul on Chazal, like Rav Avraham and Rambam just said. Even though we recognize their greatness in halacha, this is not. It's not in any sense a disrespect to say that in areas of science they were not giving us Masorah. He states this as being the first principle that every student of Chazal's statements wants to keep in mind. That's a very strong statement. He's unequivocal in his approach. Let me show you something even more interesting. In number 10, there's a book called Shmiras HaGuf VaHaNefesh, which is all about the halachic areas and hashkafic areas that deal with protecting oneself against physical ailments or spiritual ailments of different kinds, mazikin, etc. In his hakdama, in his introduction, he prints the following. Look at this number 10. I don't know if you have this when you're reading it. This book was printed in the last 20 years. Okay? Ba'alam Ra'isi b'sefer Nishmas Avram. He quotes the sefer Nishmas Avram. The Nishmas Avram was written by Dr. Abraham. Okay? A very leading Rav, massive Talmud Chochem in the area of medical ethics and halachic angles on refuah and all things like that. The Peri Yud Dalet, okay? Tzif Dalet. She may be Divrei Rav Shrir Agon. He brings Rav Shrir Agon, who lived one of the Goyim, but Rav Ram ben Arambam, and also Rav Avram ben Arambam that we saw. Umana inyan zeh ke'echad min hatam. I mean, he counts their approach as one of the reasons she'ein lehishamesh b'refuah samavuah Talmud, not to use the refuah in the Talmud. In other words, everybody today says not to use the refuah in the Talmud. The question is why? Is it because nishtane hateva? Is it because we don't understand exactly what they were saying? We might get it wrong, or is it because they may have got it wrong. So fine. He listed, the Rav Shuragon listed this as a reason. The Hagon Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Shlita, Heir Azeh, he pointed out in this Sefer, Nishmas Avram, the Nachon Hayala Havishita Zo, that it's appropriate to bring this opinion, B'Shem, in the name of Yesh Omrim. Yesh Omrim. The Ha'ikah, but the main opinion, Hu Kashar HaTam, is the other reasons, which are Nishtane HaTever, or we don't know what it is. But if you're going to say that Chazal are wrong on these issues, you should print it only as a Yesh Omrim. Why?
You'll be put in the favor. Dangerous to say
that,
because then you could say, well, how do we know that? How do we know what's
sure
and what's
not,
and how do we know that they didn't get it
wrong? So let's continue. The Sha'alti Lagon Rav Shlomo Zalman, and I asked, says the Nishmas Avram, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Mi hu zeh shecholik al divrei Rav Shuragon, Rav Ram min Rambam. So who is it that would disagree with this Ashita that Chazal may have got the medical evidence wrong? So who are the opinions that say no? The Kasavli, and he wrote back to him, the Zelashonah, this is what Rav Shlomo Zalman said. Ka'eit, right now, Einei Zocher im Yesh Mishahu Shemamash Cholek. I'm not sure if there is anyone who actually clearly disagrees with this. Or Afilu im Yesh Mishahu Sheyochel Lachlot. I'm not sure if anyone could disagree with this approach, which is the one of Rav Hirsch and Rav Avram and Rambam, etc. I'm not sure he says, Rav Shlomo Zalman, that anyone could really argue with this and claim that Chazal could never get any refuah wrong because of the science. Achitachain, but maybe shekavanati, that what I really went is to hilva rabim kosva hatam shel shinu hateva. Since most people don't go for this, they go for nishdame hateva. But lo hitzkiru klam if neishipor hadeh hayeda, and they don't say the reason that we know more than we used to do. But darche rufus bizmanenu lachain irati. Therefore, I've advised sheruy lichtol b'shem yesh omrim. I think you should put it the yesh omrim. Or v'prat sheinyani shabbos yeshim atirim alecha shabbos afshel adata roifim ein shum sakana. Especially since today, in terms of Shabbos, we allow you to do things on Shabbos, even if the doctors say you don't need to. We talked about that with Bris Mila. Even if the doctors say there's no danger, what have you, the baby's fine, we will stop you from doing the Bris Mila, what have you. In other words, we don't listen to medical advice all the time, where we machmir against it. If the doctors say it's okay, maybe we say it's not okay. What you get from this is very interesting. Which is really, Rav Shlomo Zalman says, I don't see how anyone could disagree with this principle. It's just that you have to give it as a yesh omrim. Why? Because of the realities of the politics. Meaning, people get upset by this because they think that what's going to happen is people are going to sit in a shir like you nice people, and are going to hear that Chazal may have got the science wrong, and are going to walk out of the shir and say, well, let's do a kal v'chomer, or not a kal v'chomer, let's extrapolate. If Chazal got the science wrong, then maybe got the Torah wrong. It's not a kal v'chomer, it's the opposite. But actually, he says that why would you say that? Because Torah and science, why are they even relevant to each other? Yes? It's not a wrong thing. No, he didn't say don't tell them. He's not. I understand. You're being a bit conspiracy theorist about it. Meaning, he's not saying, let's put it bluntly. He's not saying lie to people to keep them from. He's not saying that. Let's put it in its bluntest way. He's not saying that at all. He's saying, look, this is a legitimate reason. I don't want you to cover it up. But present it as a yesh omrim, just because it is a yesh omrim. Everything's a yesh omrim if you think about it. There's this view, and there's this view, and there's this view. Because the way that people tend to view it these ways, is that this is a minority opinion. And therefore present it as a minority opinion. Even though he says, really, I'm not sure who could really disagree with this in Svara. It makes sense. But we live in the real world. The real world is more complicated and less ideal than we'd like it to be. And in the real world, there are dangers of people taking things in the wrong directions, and therefore Mohammed needs to be at least a little guarded in it. Do you agree with that? I don't think it's being backward to present an opinion in a book as a yesh omrim. That's not being backward. It's saying that this is an opinion which is not the generally accepted opinion, but it's an opinion.
Right,
yeah, okay. Well, no one's going to burn his books, but they might get more upset with him. It's an interesting question. Obviously, you're idealistic, which is how you should be. But in the real world, if you want to try and get a message across, and you're going to do it in a way which is going to antagonize people, even if you argue that those people have no business being antagonized, because they're just, you know, ignoring the truth. What would you rather do? Would you rather get your main message across and put the controversial bits in an acceptable format, or would you rather blazon it through and get the whole thing thrown out? What would you rather do? You have to work in the real world. In the real world, people get nervous about this view. We'll see other people clearly who definitely don't like this view. I understand why. Do you understand why they're nervous?
If you get more and more people to accept it, the people respect, then the people will stop.
I agree. That is the reason why I'm teaching you this year. That is the reason why I want you to understand that this view is not dangerous. It's not heretical.
No. He should be, like, supporting it and getting it out.
He's just giving the guy a piece of advice. He's saying, bring the view, quote it as the Yesh Omrim. And no one's hiding this source. It's out there in the library, and you can look it up and see Rav Shlomo Zalman said X, Y, and Z. The problem that Rabbi Slifkin had when he brought the book is he gave these opinions, and he was told by people today that you cannot bring those opinions anymore. Why not? This goes to a deeper issue, which is there a psak in hashkofic issues? So this itself is a machlokas. Meaning, let's say I brought out a sefer and brought also like halacha lemaisa sefer for people who maybe didn't have that much background, and I brought all sorts of views in the Rishonim that we don't paskin like. Let's say, and I brought there's an opinion that this, there's an opinion that I could create a whole sefer on Hilchos Shabbos, let's say, of stuff which is completely not the halacha, but just by presenting different views, that would be, I hope you would agree, irresponsible. If I wrote a halacha sefer and said, there is an opinion that, and we just don't paskalize that opinion, then that's going to be completely wrong, whether it's machmer or mekel. In hashkafa, is that the same thing? That's the question. If I bring opinions, and there are people that say, we don't paskalize those opinions, they're going to get upset. But other people are going to say, well, no, it's not the same in hashkafa. There's no psak in that way. Meaning, you don't like the opinion that people say that Chazal were wrong in terms of science. Okay, you don't like that, but that's not the halacha. You can't pass in the halacha, and then people say, yes. The Haredi world on the whole takes the view that there is a psak in hashkofa. And if there's a psak in hashkofa, then bringing opinions which don't go according to the psak is irresponsible, just like it would be in halacha. And the non-Haredi world takes the view, this is the underlying debate, there is no psak in hashkofa. There are different hashkofic opinions, and therefore it's legit to bring the different opinions. You have your hand up?
No, you.
The same could be true about Zionism. You know anything? Is there a psak that Zionism is wrong? So some would hold that there is. Some would say the Gedolim of today's world have paskened that Zionism is wrong. Now then you get into a rather silly argument about who are Gedolim and my Gedolim are bigger than your Gedolim and all that kind of stuff, which is obviously unhelpful and not particularly adults. But at the end of the world, at the end of the day, people will say that. There is a psak in these issues, and therefore you're not allowed to be Zionist, you're not allowed to be this. So they say the same thing about this.
Are they wrong?
It's a machlokas.
They're not.
They, in that world, they can bring riots. They can bring riots. Again, we're looking at the, just like on the micro hashkafic issue, should you be Zionist or should you not be Zionist, you can bring riots this way, and you can bring riots that way. On the meta hashkafic issue of, is there a psak in halacha, you can bring riots this way, you can bring riots that way.
So pretty much, if you're in that world, you have to follow that
stuff. Right.
That world,
right. And Rabbi Slifkin realized that, too late perhaps, that as part of the Haredi world and producing these books for the Haredi world, that he was going up against this meta-hashkafic issue, and they were going to say, there's a psak in hashkafa, this is not acceptable anymore as an opinion, even though it was the Rambam's and his son's opinion, and Rav Shira Gaon, and Rav Hirsch, and. That's not the psak, just like I'm not going to bring you from Rishonim in Halacha as well. Rabbi Slifkin made the mistake in trying to fight that, and you can't fight a whole community that has a certain position. That community position is not illegitimate, it's just that he's, you know,
So that depends
on how you're presenting it. Meaning, if I quote the opinion, it's a little bit like Beis Shammai. If I quote Beis Shammai's opinion, is Beis Shammai's opinion legitimate or not legitimate? And the answer is, on a kind of philosophical level, it's legitimate. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But if I were to bring a book a practical halacha and quoted, there is another opinion that, and then quote Beis Shammai's opinion, that's not right. Because that really isn't a practical opinion at all. They would say the same is true of Hashkofa. Just like halacha. And everyone has to understand that. It's not just that they're being backwards or reactionary or negative. It's not that. It's not that at all. It's just they have a different opinion in the meta hashkafic issue of whether there's a psak in hashkafa or not. Actually, we'd have to learn that as a separate shir. There are plenty of makorot that they can bring that there's a psak in hashkafa, and there are plenty of makorot you can bring that there isn't. I mean, the Rambam is one of the classic people who will say that there is no psak in hashkafa, according to most people's reading of the Rambam, which will be perfectly consistent. And therefore, Rav Slifkin realized that he had to speak to a different audience, which is what he does now. Just like if I were to try and bring out a book in the Haredi world about how important it is to be Zionist. I don't think that would go down too well either. Yes?
So, for people that don't follow, like, the science view of things, that the scientists know what they're talking about,
but if
they think that, like, the Torah holds all the knowledge,
so we'll get to that in a minute. So, the approach that science is right and Chazal maybe got the science wrong is a legitimate approach, although some people may be nervous about it, for reasons which actually I can understand as well, because other people will take it and go somewhere else with it. Let's go for the next one. I've got 10 minutes. Yes, 100%. And therefore, you will say that, like, this is a thought-through Haredi position as well. But Rosh Hashanah Zalman is, like, you can't put people in boxes in that way. When it comes to the real people, they're all their own people, and they don't fit into these nice, neat little hashkafic pigeonholes, in that sense. You know? Rosh Hashanah Zalman said all sorts of things that sound interestingly broad in different ways. It helps. It helps because then people will take you more seriously. But let's go on to the next. We have to be principled and yet work in the real world as well. Otherwise you achieve nothing. Okay. Let's have a look at number 11. By the way, I should say to you, maybe I shouldn't say this because it's going on tape, but I don't think this is such a secret. Many, many years ago, Rabbi Sacks wrote a sefer, which got into serious trouble as well. It was called The Dignity of Difference, where he made certain hashkafic statements in the book that proved to be very controversial, okay? And people objected, and people said, this is wrong for this reason. And his approach to it was, he said, terrible sorry, we'll bring out a book with a slightly revised wording, which is more acceptable to everybody, and there's a second edition of The Dignity of Difference, with those little bits kind of changed. If you're interested, I can show you where they all are. I've got the both editions at home with the highlighted, you know, because I'm a trouble causer like that. I didn't cause any trouble at the time. Who am I? But he didn't fight it, and he didn't go down screaming and shouting, how can you do this? How can you say this? And in retrospect, that was very sensible. Because now he's able to get his message out there, because everyone else turned around afterwards and said, oh, okay then. In other words, it's part of... I agree. And you know something? It's very hard to know who are going to be in 300 years' time the people that people look at today as being the real heroes of the day. It's very hard to know that. I'll give you another example which backs up your point. The Ramchal. You know the Ramchal, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzato. If you'd have made any predictions during the lifetime of the Ramchal as to what people are going to think of the Ramchal in 300 years, you wouldn't have got it right. People regarded him as dangerous, as fringe, as heretical in some ways. They confiscated his books. There was a context. There was a context. He was coming just after Shabtai Tzvi at a time when they were worried that he was going to be, and he was very strange. Strange, like there are unusual things. They, by the age of 17, 18, they were learning Zohar day and night. His Talmidim say he had regular chavrusas with Adam Arishan and Mashiach, Avram Avinu, and all those kinds of places. Like, you know, things that to us seem a little bit unusual, but in the context of being a Kabbalist of that nature were not so. And therefore today he has been totally mainstreamed as one of the classics and the greats. That's not necessarily what you'd have predicted then. Chassidus, again, yeah, I agree. Let's go on, because we've a lot to do. We've only 10 minutes to do it. Solution number 4. This is really interesting, which is, you know something? Maybe the halacha is the halacha, and they gave reason X, or maybe there are other reasons. Have a look at this interesting piece by Rav Dessler. I think fit to note here that which I heard explicitly from Rav Dessler. This is Rav Aryeh Carmel writing. Okay? Where he asked after about certain laws for which the reasons may have been given are inconsistent with the reality determined by science of the later generation. It is ruled that one may kill a louse on Shabbos because the louse doesn't reproduce sexually, but spontaneously generates. Rav Dessler said that these and many similar cases, the law is never changed. You can still kill lice on Shabbos. But what about the science? Even though the reason is not initially understandable to us, rather we must firmly grasp the law with both hands, whether stringently or leniently. Meaning, yes, kill those lice. Get on down there and kill those lice on Shabbos. Because it's still mutter to do that. The reason, explained Rav Dessler, is that Chazal knew the law as a tradition from earlier generations. Meaning he's saying that, okay, maybe the science wasn't a Masora, but the halacha was. And if they said, if there was a halacha, a Masora, that you can kill lice on Shabbos, that was a Masora from earlier. But with regard to these scientific explanations, it's not the explanation that mandates the law, but rather the opposite. The law mandates an explanation. The reason given in the Talmud is not the sole possible reason. And if on occasions they give an explanation according to the scientific knowledge of their day, we are obligated to search for other explanations which establish the law on its basis according to the scientific knowledge of our day. Meaning, the halacha is a halacha, and they just connected it with a scientific suggestion that maybe lice don't reproduce. Okay, they do. So find another reason. He suggests another reason. What's his other reason? Things which are not visible to the human eye are not halachically relevant. We see this all the time. A spot on an esrog, or an insect on a piece of fruit, which is not visible to the human eye, is not halachically relevant. It's not that Chazal is saying there are no insects on the fruit. They're saying there are no insects which are halachically problematic. So maybe too, a louse, since we don't see that it reproduces sexually, without microscopes, maybe that's just halachically irrelevant. So choose that reason. Choose another reason. But the halacha is the halacha. And the science is not the thing that creates the halacha, but the halacha, if you like, leads to the science. Rav Soloveitchik, presumably, would agree with that as well. His idea that the halacha is an ontological a priori system, in words that he might use, probably better than I would. Okay? Similarly, we find this, I'm going to go through these leg sources very quickly, with the trefus, the idea that the trefus are halacha l'moshe m'Sinai. Lots of these sources, 12 through 15, deal with this issue, that since the Chazal gave us the list of trefus on Sinai, which are trefus, so these are the trefus, our science today says that they can survive. Okay, so find a different reason. Meaning Chazal said these are the trefus and gave a reason that they can't survive for more than 12 months. So okay, now they can survive for more than 12 months. It doesn't change the halacha, it just means that we have to find a different reason why these are the trefus. Okay, fine. Let me just move on to the last three or four reasons very quickly, which I need to just talk about now. First of all, go on to page 5. Halacha is fixed due to the sealing of the Shas. So that's a technical thing, meaning we know that there is a davash b'minyan needs a minyan achel atiroi, and therefore, even if you turn around and say, well, maybe it's based on incorrect science, but technically we can't do anything, wait for a Sanhedrin and we'll move on. If you don't like that, then cry about Golas and daven for Mashiach and hope that it's going to change. But this is the reason why the halacha can't change. That's one answer, which actually makes a lot of sense halachically, although it's not very satisfying, you know, hashkafically. What about the 2,000 years of Torah? So the Chazon Ish in number 19 says this, that this idea of 6,000 years of the world, I'm sure you're familiar with it, 2,000 years before Torah, 2,000 years of Torah, 2,000 years when Mashiach can come. So the Chazon Ish says there are 2,000 years of Torah in which anything halachic is downloaded. They go from basically Avram Avinu to the Mishnah, just after the Mishnah. So anything which was downloadable during those 2,000 years, that becomes fixed as Torah. Once those 2,000 years are finished, there is no more download. Meaning, if the science of the day creates halacha ABC, then the only science which is relevant is the science up until the end of the 2,000 year download. After the 2,000 years, that's not the Zman Torah anymore, it's the Zman Mashiach, it's a different thing. And therefore we have the halachas, not because we're stuck with them technically because we don't have a Sanhedrin, because that was the time in which the Torah was downloaded. A more mystical approach. There are those that say, are you asking a question or you're just yawning? You're just stretching. Very confusing. But okay, there are those that turn around and say, look, you can't trust science. You can't trust science. Science gets things wrong. Are you going to change halacha based on science? How do you know that the lice don't reproduce? Are you sure about that? Are you sure that they do reproduce, rather? Have a look at number 21 and 22 for a second. This is also brought in the Pachad Yitzchak in response to him. or he's reacting against this. You cannot change the halacha which is based on the Masorah of our early authorities because of the science of the non-Jewish world. A person who is a believer doesn't have to request from somewhere else riots for Tanas, proofs and analysis. Even if there may be many, and they may be strong, we are happy with our Kabbalah. We don't go looking for confirmation from elsewhere. And he goes on to say that at the end of the day, science is based on a very superficial, very gashmi. Of course it is, by definition, it's physical proof in the physical world. And our Torah is not coming from that, it's coming from a much deeper understanding, much more spiritual reality, etc. And therefore science is just not reliable enough to prove halacha wrong. Looking at number 22, says the Chida, there were some that decided to move away from Chazal because they were wise in their studies and the sciences. They had a breadth of knowledge. They believed the Chazal was sages alone. And this is why they said that they also possessed wisdom up to the point that they were wiser. But they should have paid attention to the fact that Chazal possessed divine inspiration. That's true. Ruach HaKodesh is a part of the halachic process. Eliyahu was frequently fanned by them. Their souls are from the uppermost heights, etc., etc. Rav Moshe Sternbuch says this in perhaps the strongest way over on page 6. Rav Moshe Sternbuch is a leading rav in Yerushalayim today. He has often a harif. You know what I mean by harif? Quite a strong way of expressing things. And I dare say there may be things in this paragraph that you feel you disagree with. When he says that science is sometimes wrong, let's just pick up a couple of things. And he talks about the flood. Scientists, look at the last paragraph. Even those who are described as religious are ashamed that we don't agree with the views of leading scientists. The man is descended from the apes. They rush to find isolated statements of our sages, rabbis, and commentaries that seem consistent with contemporary scientific view. They use misleading and distorted citations from Torah literature to claim justification for scientific beliefs in the words of the sages. Meaning, are you trying to twist the Torah to fit the science? Or are you happy the Torah says what it says, and if the science doesn't agree, fine, so the science might change? How far do you take this? And there are other riots that I brought you in 25 through 27, more classic riots where they say, if you think you have a cow which lives, even though Chazal says it's a trefa, you must be wrong. You must have got mixed up with another one. And if Chazal say it can't live, then it can't live. And if the scientists say it can, they're obviously wrong. How far do you take this? How far do you turn around and say scientists are like wrong? Now, at a certain point, it's obviously ridiculous. There are students who are told that there's no such thing as dinosaurs. The dinosaur bones are all made of plastic. It's all a conspiracy theory against Judaism. That's obviously ludicrous. But do you say that science could just be wrong, therefore don't worry about it? Is it likely that science that we learn today will be proved wrong? Well, I think it depends on what kind of science. Meaning, I think it's very likely that certain theories as to how the universe originated will be changed every 10, 15 years. And in 100 years from now, they probably won't say the same thing as they say now. But I think it's very unlikely that they'll decide that the sun actually goes, you know, around the outside of the Rakia and comes back in the other side. I think that's extremely unlikely.
China will object.
Right. Exactly. I think it's unlikely they'll discover the world is flat. I think it's not that we ever said it was, but it's certain things are scientifically pretty much there. And they're easily provable and observable. And other things are more theoretical. We have a problem in the world today which is called scientism, which is that people have made a religion of science. If science says something, then it has to be true, even if it's a faith system. Let me end you with an interesting example. There is an interesting problem in modern cosmology called the Goldilocks problem, which is that everything in the universe seems to be just right. Just right. All of the relationships between the different variables of atomic attraction and gravitational force and all those nuclear forces seem to be just balanced and calibrated exactly in the way that you need in order to create a universe. My wife bought me a book written by, what's his name? Can't remember. The Astronomer Royal of a non-Jewish astronomer, very leading scientist, in England, where he read a whole book on this. It's called Just Seven Numbers, where he goes through and he says, how can it be that the universe is calibrated in this way? It looks as though it was made this way by design. But then he ends the book and he says, but I don't accept this idea of design because I'm not religious. So I've come up with another theory. And it's not his theory, but he's a very strong proponent of it. It's called the multiverse. What's the multiverse? There are multiple universes. There are infinite universes out there. And this happens to be the one, of course, in an infinite system of universes, one of them is going to get it exactly right. And we exist only because we happen to be in the one that's exactly right. But there are an infinite version out there that fail. They are completely undetectable because they lay outside the universe. And the only reason we might believe in them is because it's sort of a logical, sort of almost belief system that they were there. You can't prove this in any way. So it's a belief system on a certain level. It's a scientific belief system on a certain level. So I think one has to be careful about scientism, where people believe things just because scientists say so. On the other hand, I think one has to be realistic that science is right about a whole bunch of things, and just to say that science is wrong is not a way of dealing with this issue. The last point, which I'm not going to get into now, is that sometimes Chazal is speaking in metaphors, and they talk about things which are really quite interesting. I brought you this mouse. What happened to Nadiba? She kind of was here at the beginning and then disappeared. I brought you this mouse, which I'll talk about in different ways. You can look at the... there are all sorts of things in the Gemara where Chazal talk about scientific realities that seemed fictional at the time that now happen to be very clearly applicable in different areas. There's a surrogacy, what have you, which I haven't got time for now. I think I went through the picture of the cows giving birth. Yeah. Yes? And you know what I'm talking about when I say that. So this is an issue that you need to be aware of the different approaches on, and you'll see which one sits best with you and which one is the one that you feel most able to deal with. But at the end of the day, there is definitely a different approaches to this. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you.